Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s, with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more, on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone, and by everyone from Aronson to Zerky. Tonight is a very special show with a single birthday to celebrate, that of jazz trumpeter and composer Bob Efros. You hear him quite often on the show, even if I don't always mention his presence on specific records. Normally around here we celebrate birthdays after the fact, but Bob would be 116 years old this Tuesday, December 6th. Thanks to Facebook, I've had the chance to meet and get to know Bob's granddaughter, Barbara Efros, who lives here in Southern California, and she's here in the KISL studio to help us celebrate the birthday of the man she affectionately refers to as Grandpa Bob. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you, Glenn, and I really want to thank you for having the show. But I discovered your show about 2 years ago when I was looking for more early jazz radio shows. Before we even spoke, I listened to prior shows of yours, and I was amazed at how many songs I knew and how many songs my grandpa Bob Efros played on. And eventually we connected, and I was really flattered when almost a year ago you had noted it was my grandpa's birthday was in December and suggested doing a show. So here we are.
Here we are. It's been great fun getting ready for this. We'll see what happens. I normally, when we're doing birthday tributes, give a lot of facts and background about a person before going into playing some records. So why don't you give us the lowdown on Bob Efros, where he was born, how he got into music, and so on.
My grandpa, Bob Efros, was born in London, December 6, 1900. But he was fortunate to live till 1983, of which I was 23 years old. And some every week of my life spent spring vacations, much of summertime in Forest Hills, New York. And early jazz music was as much or more of my life, you know, than all my favorite 70s rock bands. My grandpa was born in England. His parents were Russian Jewish immigrants, and they were in London for about 6 years. And they immigrated to the United States in 1903. And Grandpa Bob, I refer to him as Grandpa Bob. We have a large extended family, and some call him Uncle Bob, Cousin Bob. I say Grandpa Bob, and among my jazz friends, he's known as GB. Anyways, Grandpa Bob was raised in the South. He was raised in Memphis, Tennessee, and that's where he gained his early foundations of jazz trumpet. Why jazz trumpet? They lived in a house that was an old Confederacy house. And Grandpa, when he was a little boy, was rummaging in the attic and found an old cornet, and he wanted to play the cornet. And his parents didn't really approve of it because Grandpa's grandmother, who died in Russia, was a concert pianist for the Russian symphony. So the cornet was sort of seen as, they wanted him to play piano, but they didn't have money for a piano.
Did he get formal lessons, or did he learn that on his own?
He was largely self-taught, except then when he was around 10 and a half years old, in the early 1900s, he started hanging around on Beale Street and was mesmerized by W.C. Handy's trumpet playing. And Memphis, even though it was the early 1900s, was a fairly, I wouldn't call it segregated, but the Jews were the new immigrants, where the African Americans were almost second generation immigrants at that point. And W.C. Handy, he of course was only playing in, you know, bars where the black community was allowed. But Memphis was early on in letting white customers come in and listen. So Grandpa started hanging out in these clubs on Beale Street following W.C. Handy around. Handy was about 15 to 18 years older than him. And he ended up, you know, hanging out in the kitchen with Handy, wherever he could, to get Handy to teach him some runs on the trumpet and some tunes. And then later, when Grandpa was 11 and a half, he ran away from home. And he was hired as a purser on the Mississippi River boat. He was, as he said, lucky to meet King Oliver and later Louis Armstrong. And Louis Armstrong and Grandpa were very close in age, and they would follow the leads of King Oliver whenever they could. Both had very similar experiences. My grandfather was sent to an old boys' school when his mother died. My grandfather was 8 when his mother died, so he was sent to an old boys' school. Louis Armstrong, his mother died when he was 6 or 7, and he was sent to a boys' home, and also had a lot of support. And their connection was that my great grandpa, worked on the railroad, and Louis Armstrong was working in the coal mines, and they also had this love of trumpet. Louis Armstrong had this incredible sense of humor, as we all know, and my grandpa did as well. Louis Armstrong ended up going to Chicago, and my grandpa went to New York. He hit the streets in New York when he was 16, and the only person he knew there was W.C. Handy.
Did he go to New York specifically to try to have a music career?
Yes, yes. And he looked up Handy, and they met up at a restaurant, and Handy said, "What can you play?" So they went outside to the kitchen, and Grandpa had his trumpet with him, and he played for Handy St. Louis Blues, which Handy, of course, had written. Well, Handy was really impressed. Mr. Handy sent the young trumpeter, my grandpa, to Sam Lannon for Grandpa's first gig. And Grandpa's first gig was at the Roseland, where his band played.
I'm going to actually let Grandpa Bob tell that story himself.
My grandpa was in the 60s. No, probably late 60s when this recording took place.
So here's Bob Efros himself from an interview in April of 1979.
I'd like to tell you a story on W.C. Handy, the father of the blues. He knew me when I was a little kid in Memphis. And when I came to New York, I didn't know a soul, and he was a very big publisher at the time, called the father of the blues. And I went up to him, told him I didn't know a soul, and I wanted to get a job. So he said, "Bob, I'm going to get you a job." So he called Sam Lannon up at the Roseland. He said, "Look, I've got a kid here, just came from Memphis. I want you to hear him play." So he said, "Send him up with his trumpet. I want to hear him." So I went up there. So he said to me, "What do you want to play?" I said, "I don't care, whatever you name it." He said, "How about the St. Louis Blues?" So we started playing the St. Louis Blues, and then the people out on the dance floor, they started carrying on something terrible. They were going crazy. So there were 3 fellas that owned the Roseland. He took me over to them. He said, "I'm hiring this kid." They said, "You better not." He said, "Why not? Did you see what was going on the floor? We'll have to get raided here." So W.C. Handy says to me, "You meet me at Sam Lannon said to me, "You meet me on local 310, which was on 86th Street. That was before it was 802. He said, "I'll get you a job tomorrow." So he told somebody about me, and I got a job in Palisades Park. That was my first job. Many years later, I became one of the top officials of Local 802, and I made it my business to have W.C. Handy made an honorary member of Local 802, and of all locals, the Memphis local, which never took blacks in. So we went up, he had a palace up in Westchester, and we went up to his house, and there was a big crowd up there. All our officials were there, and all the big wheels of NAACP were there. Martin Luther King was there, and they were all making speeches. So finally they got down to me and said, "Well, Bob, do you have anything to say?" I said, "I certainly do." I said, "There was a dance hall in Memphis called Lanier's Merry Gardens. And one night, W.C. Handy came in through the back door and walked over to the leader, and the leader looked at him. He said, "Why do you come in the back door?" So he said to the leader, "I didn't want to start any trouble. I thought I'd sneak in through the back." So the leader said, "Well, what's on your mind?" He says, "I just wrote a tune. All I have is a lead sheet. I wonder if you'd be kind enough to play it. It's a tune called the St. Louis Blues." So the leader played it. "And I want you to know that this is the leader standing in front of you." I said, "Isn't that right, W.C.?" He says, "And how, that's right." I was the first one in the world to play St. Louis Blues.
I think it's about time we had some music, and what better record to play than the tune which had such an impact on the life of Bob Efros, the St. Louis Blues. The Broadway Broadcasters, a Sam Lennon group with W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues from a Cameo 78 made February 22, 1927. Although Bob Efros isn't listed in the personnel on this record, for years he played with Sam Lennon's Roseland Orchestra. And from there, Barbara?
And from there, he moved on to Vincent Lopez Orchestra. He was hired by Lopez in mid-1921, and it was the heyday. Lopez was hiring and competing with Paul Whiteman. And Grandpa used to tell stories about himself and Jimmy and Tommy Dorsey and Xavier Cugat, Jimmy Durante, Teddy Raff. So all these fellows were kind of a gang. And Grandpa would tell stories about going up to hear what Paul Whiteman was doing. And Paul Whiteman was expanding his brass section. So of course, Vincent Lopez had to do the same. Grandpa was employed full-time by Vincent Lopez from mid-1921 to June 1927.
Do you have a favorite record of Lopez?
There is so many.
Let's look through and see what we can find. Thank you.
Vincent Lopez and his Casa Lopez Orchestra with Bob Efros and his pal Mike Mosiello on trumpets, and A Cup of Coffee, A Sandwich, and You, from around January 13th, 1926.
All right, on my notes here, I have that Grandpa Bob backed up Annette Hanshaw on some of her recordings. Tell us about Annette.
Annette Hanshaw, well, for me personally, is one of my favorite 1920s, 30s singers. I regret not getting to meet her in my young adult life. Grandpa Bob played with her in New York extensively, both live and on radio. His countless songs. One of my favorites is You're the Cream in My Coffee.
You have a great way, an up-to-date way of telling me you love me. It gives me such a thrill. I know it always will. My head is turning, and just from learning your estimation of me. And as for you, I'll say, I feel the self-same way. You're the cream in my coffee. You're the salt in my stew. You will always be my necessity. I'd be lost without you. You're the starch in my collar. You're the lace in my shoe. You will always be my necessity. I'd be lost without you. Most girls tell love tales, and you'll find each phrase dovetails. You've heard each known way. This way is my own way. You're the sail of my love boat. You're the captain and crew. You will always be my necessity. I'd be lost without you.
Annette Hanshaw with You're the Cream in My Coffee from November 8, 1928. Annette was accompanied on many of her recordings by Bob Efros, but there you heard Andy Sanella on clarinet, alto sax, and steel guitar, Charlie Magnanti on accordion, and an unidentified pianist.
Well, this would be a good place to point out that not only was Bob Efros a fine trumpeter, but he was also a fine composer. I think he wrote 10 or 12 titles?
Over 12 compositions, yes. The most well-known are the trumpet solos, Corn Fed, that he wrote with Phil Wall, Tin Ear, which are trumpet solos, and then the song Why Don't You Get Lost, that he also wrote with Phil Wall. And Why Don't You Get Lost was a response to a hot song by Louis Armstrong, or recorded by Louis Armstrong, You Rascal, You. Grandpa loved that song. It was used in a cartoon, but also Louis Armstrong recorded it. You Rascal, You.
I'll be glad when you're dead, You Rascal, You. That's
right,
it.
Right. The song Grandpa composed was Why Don't You Get Lost, and we have it here.
Mm-hmm. town. Oh, why don't you get lost? You'd be better off laying neath the ground. Why don't you get lost? Oh, you messed around with my baby. I won't stand for being double-crossed. Take a fool's advice, I told you twice. Why don't you get lost? Green said to Henry Green, boy, why don't you get lost? You're the slowest man I've ever seen. Why don't you get lost? If you want to get all my loving, then you gotta learn to pay the cost. When you love this brown, lay your money down. Why don't you get lost? Said to me last night, boy, why don't you get lost? And she said, you ain't what you used to be, boy, why don't you get lost? Once you were the hottest of lovers, now you're like a broken down horse. So get on your way, 'cause you had your day. Why don't you get lost?
Chick Bullock and his Levee Loungers with Why Don't You Get Lost, written by Bob Efros and Phil Wall, with the lyric by J. Russell Robinson. That recording is from May 13th, 1932.
Tell us about Cornfed.
And there's a lot of YouTube videos that have Cornfed, and they're showing cornfields, and it doesn't have anything to do with cornfields. Cornfed was slang for a certain kind of male that was a little loose. They called women floosies, maybe in the 30s, 40s. Corn-fed men sort of had a looser woman or maybe a mistress. And so this was actually a trumpet solo. My grandpa had lyrics for it, but given the time that it was written, there was censorship. So when they offered to let him publish just the composition with no lyrics, he signed on. And I'm thrilled that you're playing it today. Thank you.
Fred Nichols and his Five Pennies from Brunswick 3597, recorded June 20th, 1927, and Corn Fed, written by Bob Efros and Phil Wall. I'm Glenn Robison, and you're listening to a special edition of Rapidly Rotating Records, celebrating the birthday of trumpeter and composer Bob Efros, with our special guest, Bob's granddaughter, Barbara Efros.
Well, I want to play another of Grandpa Bob's compositions, and that is Tin Ear.
Tin Ear actually was a song that Grandpa wrote for Thomas Edison. When I was younger, I used to think this was a fish story, but I've actually authenticated it many times. Grandpa met Thomas Edison late teens, early 20s. Once he created a recording device that we would call the earliest record player, he only wanted opera and classical music performed on it. And my grandpa was a friend of his, which I've been able to corroborate. Grandpa would tell the story about trying to convince Edison to record jazz music.
So we're going to hear from Grandpa Bob himself again here, and a story about Thomas Edison and his well-known hearing problem.
I used to work for Thomas Edison. He was very, very hard of hearing. We'd make the cylinder records and the flat records, and it was recorded on wax. We get through recording, he had a horn about that long, and put it next to his ear, and he'd listen to it. They'd play it for him. So one day I said, "You know, Mr. Edison, they just came out with something new. You ought to try it." He said, "What's that?" I said, "It's a hearing aid. You put it in your ear, and you're able to hear." He said, "The hell with it. I don't even want to try it." I said, "Why not?" He said, "It can't be any good. I didn't invent it."
So Grandpa wrote this song, Tin Ear, which was dedicated to Thomas Edison, though Edison never let him say on radio or on television interviews that it was for him. I'm letting out the secret.
So we're going to hear not one, but two completely different versions of Tin Ear, written by Bob Efros for, well, maybe not for as much as about Thomas Edison. The first is Bob Efros himself in a trumpet solo accompanied on piano by Arthur Shutt.
Thank you.
Jan Garber and his orchestra, February 18th, 1928, and Tin Ear, written by Bob Efros. And before that, Tin Ear, played as a trumpet solo by Bob Efros himself, accompanied on piano by Arthur Schutt, from Brunswick 4620, recorded in October of 1929. So another group that Grandpa Bob played with was the Boswell Sisters.
The Boswell Sisters, one of the remarkable first, quote, girl groups. Three sisters, rare unknown claims to fame, is that one of the sisters is actually disabled. And my grandpa used to tell me he had incredible respect for musicians and performers that were disabled. Connie Boswell was actually in a wheelchair, the most the public never knew because we only heard people on radio. And when the three sisters went their separate ways, you know, with marriages and so forth, Connie Boswell continued on her own, you know, played well into the 40s. You know, in Europe, you know, back in the States, recorded with Bing Crosby. But Grandpa had incredible respect for her and stayed in touch with her most of his life. She lived in Los Angeles. Three sisters lived in Los Angeles, but he would visit them when he came out here. And thanks to his Connie Boswell's niece and granddaughter, Kyla Titus, the Boswell sisters' legacy has been written up in a wonderful book. And Bette Midler has recently recorded one of the Boswell sisters' songs. And I'd like to share one of their many wonderful songs with you right now. My grandpa, Bob Efros, was honored to be the trumpeter on.
The Boswell Sisters, Connie, Martha, and Helvetia, better known as Vet, with Sing a Little Jingle, written by Mort Dixon and Harry Warren. The trio was backed on that May 25, 1931 recording by Victor Young and the Brunswick Orchestra, featuring trumpeters Bob Efros and Bunny Berrigan, who had a tremendous influence on Bob. And speaking of tremendous influences...
Grandpa Bob was close to Ethel Waters.
Well, Ethel Waters stands in a class of her own. As my grandpa, Ben Selvin, Bing Crosby, they've all been recorded and written about what a delight playing with Ethel Waters was. She's an early African-American performer, singer, that, as Grandpa said many times, and Ben Selvin said on radio and television, that when it came to Ethel Waters, people would just drop whatever they had to record, whatever they were going to do, to be able to play with her, because she was such a professional, and her voice was one of a kind. She was older than Billie Holiday, older than Sarah Vaughan, and... all of those women and more, Ella Fitzgerald, all speak about how Ethel Waters influenced their singing. And with this, one of my favorites...
Down in the pool room, some of the gang were talking of gals they knew. Women are all the same, said Joe. One dizzy bird said, pal, ain't you heard the story of true blue Lou? Listen and get an earful, bold. Say, she was a dame in love with a guy. She stuck to him but didn't know why. Everyone blamed her, still they all named her true. He gave her nothing, she gave him all. But when he had his back to the wall, who fought to save him, smiled and forgave him. True blue, blue. He got a break and went away to get a new start. But poor kid, she never got a break except the one way down in her heart. Maybe somewhere in heaven above there's a reward for that kind of love. Angels won't blame her, they too will name her true blue. But gosh, that poor kid, she never got a break except the one way down in her heart. But maybe somewhere in heaven above there's a reward for that kind of love. Angels won't blame her, they too will name her true.
From the film The Dance of Life, that was True Blue Lou, composed by Richard Whiting, with the Sam Coslow lyric exquisitely sung there on June 7, 1929, by Miss Ethel Waters. In the band, Bob Efros on trumpet, Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, Ben Selvin, Frank Signorelli, Tony Colucci, Joe Tarto, and Stan King.
Not only did Grandpa Bob appear on a lot of records, but he also was heard on a lot of cartoons.
When I was 11 or 12, I met Mae Questel, one of the voices of Betty Boop. And Grandpa introduced me to her. She lived in Forest Hills, New York, like my grandparents did. And she instantly went to this Betty Boop voice. And being so young, I just thought she was imitating her. But then Grandpa brought me, my sisters, And May joined us and watched a Betty Boop cartoon. And she signed my own autograph book. And Mel Blanc, I met him. And I must have been like 8, 9 years old. And I was so confused. Like, Mel Blanc truly was 1,000 voices. And then my grandfather did great imitations, too. I was too young to even comprehend that these really were the voices of the cartoons. And then, you know, within a couple of years, I got it. And then I'd be explaining it to my younger siblings and cousins. And to this day, I'm explaining it to the next generation and the next generation. Because we're lucky that those cartoons are still being restored. I mean, when my kids were little 20 years ago, I was showing them on videos, you know. Minnie the Moocher was one of Grandpa's favorite, not just because of the cartoon itself, but Cab Calloway is featured in it. And Cab Calloway was an incredible band leader in his own right. You know, one of the first, if not the first, to break into integrating black musicians and white musicians together. And Grandpa was lucky to be part of that. And Minnie the Moocher cartoon, Cab Calloway, is featured in his orchestra. And Grandpa was playing trumpet. And Grandpa's also the laughter in the, it's not quite laughter, it's almost spooky. But there's a graveyard scene of which he's doing a ho, 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 you know, sounding like a ghost. And a couple of years ago, I met Cab Calloway's grandson, Christopher Calloway Brooks, who's carried on the Cab Calloway Orchestra. And we were amazed at realizing that Cab Calloway, his grandfather, and Bob Efros, my grandfather, had lived in Harlem at the same time. And the only reason we knew it for sure was because Chris Calloway mentioned how the Marx Brothers' mother would call them all in, you know, the Marx kids. And my grandpa told the same story. So we knew they had to live there at the same time. And the Marx Brothers were a big part of my grandfather's life, too. But that's also the joy that I get about doing all this writing about my grandpa, because I'm meeting incredible people that are the children and grandchildren and descendants of, you know, musicians of the time, and we share our stories and memories and facts and fictions. And
the 1932 Betty Boop cartoon Minnie the Moocher was produced by the Fleischer Studios and released by Paramount. It opens with a live-action sequence of Cab Calloway and his orchestra performing St. James Infirmary. Betty then gets in a fight with her parents over food issues, runs away from home with her friend Bimbo, and sings a couple of songs. They wind up in a cave where a walrus, voiced by Cab Calloway, sings and dances to Minnie the Moocher, and it gets more bizarre from there. The entire film runs almost 8 minutes, but we've got time just for a very short excerpt featuring the Calloway Orchestra and Bob Efros providing the spooky laughter in the graveyard.
Folks, now here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red hot hoochie coocher. She was the roughest, toughest frail. Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Hoody ho, hoody ho.
Hoddy ho,
hoddy
ho!
Hoddy,
hoddy, hoddy! Hoddy,
hoddy, hoddy! Hee, dee, hee,
dee,
hee! Hee, dee, hee, dee!
Hoddy, hoddy, ho!
Hoddy, ho!
Earlier, I played Bob Efros' solo trumpet recording of Tin Ear, and now I'd like to play the flip side of that record. This is the 1929 Sweet and Hot, written by Mike Mosiello, and not to be confused with the 1931 Sweet and Hot, written by Jack Yellen and Harold Arlen.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Efros made lots of records with Ben Selvin, and I'd like to close out our celebration of his birthday with one of them. Barbara, tell us a little bit about your remembrances of Uncle Ben.
My grandpa Bob Efros and Ben Selvin met in the early 20s. Ben Selvin, like grandpa, was child of Russian Jewish immigrants, and Ben Selvin was known for the Moulin Rouge in New York, left the Moulin Rouge in the early 20s, and began a series of his own orchestras. Grandpa recorded with Ben Selvin under the Harmonians, the Bar Harbor Orchestra, Ben Selvin and his orchestra, under many different labels. But most of all, when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, Uncle Ben. It wasn't until this last few years that I realized that we're not even related by blood. Ben Selvin, I was fortunate to have my grandpa and Ben Selvin together here in Los Angeles in 1979 and interview them. And their sense of humor, and that's what I want to get to, is just outstanding. And they generated it through their music and people that they liked to perform with. And one thing that they promised each other was, because they were just a year or two apart in age, and they're both approaching 80, and they said, well, whoever dies first, they made a promise to each other with me saying that they'd show up at each other's funeral and they would tell jokes, because they were sort of the last of their gang to still be alive. And they had spent a lot of time in, 76 through 80, being on radio interviews and, speaking to music groups and so forth. And yes, I was lucky at, the age of 20 to be able to be with the both of them and spend a lot of time with my grandpa throughout my life until he passed in his sleep in 1983.
This is Smile, Darnya, Smile from February 27th, 1931. The words and music were written by Charles O'Flynn, Jack Meskill, and Max Rich. Ben Selvin and his orchestra play it. The Sunshine Boys, Joe Mooney and Dan Mooney, sing it. But the infectious laugh is courtesy of Bob Efros. Happy birthday, Grandpa Bob. I'm Glenn Robison, and you've been listening to Rapidly Rotating Records with our special guest, Barbara Efros. There's lots more information about and music by Bob and his friends and fellow musicians at Barbara's blog, bobefros.blogspot.com. Check out the Facebook pages Bob Efros Jazz Trumpeter, Ben Selvin Appreciation Society, and Vincent Lopez Appreciation Society. And I hope you'll visit the Rapidly Rotating Records Facebook page, leave a comment and a like, and visit our website, rapidlyrotatingrecords.com, where you can access all of our previous shows. You can also send email to glenn@rapidlyrotatingrecords.com. Cards or letters to Post Office Box 145, Claremont, California 91711. Give us a call at 1-234-PLAY-78, or even become a member of KISL at kislavalon.com. Most of all, I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week, and as always, I thank you for your very kind attention.